I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Former Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett signed a bill last year that allows a state resident who legally owns a firearm or an organization that represents gun owners in the state to challenge local gun ordinances. Act 192 went into effect on January 5th, and within a few days, the National Rifle Association sued Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Lancaster. The group claims their ordinances violate a 1974 law that bars municipalities from passing gun laws that are more stringent than the state's. In the last few years, a number of municipalities in the Commonwealth passed their own gun restrictions, and now many of them are reversing themselves for fear of the cost of a lawsuit. Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Lancaster have filed suit in Commonwealth Court, saying Act 192 violates the state constitution. It's our topic for today's Radio Times. Let me introduce our two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Jonathan Goldstein is an attorney, a partner at the law firm of McNelly and Goldstein. He's the lawyer representing the NRA in the lawsuits brought against the three Pennsylvania cities. Jonathan Goldstein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me today.
Also with us is Shira Goldman. She's a lawyer and executive director of Ceasefire Pennsylvania. That's a coalition dedicated to reducing gun violence in Pennsylvania. And Shira Goodman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's great to be here, Marty.
Let me start with you, Shira. Shouldn't your argument be aimed at the legislature for passing this law in the first place?
Well, it is. And we certainly, during the last two sessions, have tried to do everything we can to stop this. This has been a priority of the gun lobby for 4 years now. And we did try to raise the alarm with mayors and town councils and citizens. It's very wonky. It's very complicated. But the lawsuit that you referenced that three cities and various senators and representatives have filed is aimed at the legislative process, that this was a violation of the Constitution, the way they passed this law, which, as you said, this is a law that gives rights to individuals and organizations to sue towns, even if an ordinance hasn't been enforced. It completely changes the way you get into court. And they tacked it on to a bill about the theft of scrap metals. They did that the last night of the session. So there is an aim at that. But yes, we have been taking aim both at the legislators who passed it and betrayed the people and the towns in their districts, and of course the gun lobby and the NRA who have been asking for this gift.
And how much did the NRA lobby the legislature to get this passed?
We lobby all the time to protect our rights. I mean, we are a mainstream civil rights group. We have hundreds of thousands of members in this state. We have over 5 million paid members across the United States. That's twice as many as the Sierra Club and 10 times as many as the ACLU. We are always out talking to legislators, trying to do that which our members want, which is to secure their rights, their civil rights, and to secure their gun rights.
Let me use Lancaster as an example. And in Lancaster, they have an ordinance that if a gun is lost or stolen, you must report it within 72 hours. What is wrong with that?
So,
how does that violate someone's constitutional rights?
Well, hang on. We're not violating constitutional rights today, although, well, in some sense we are. We can talk about that in a minute. We're going to talk about the Ortiz case. But really, this is about municipalities not respecting the limits that were placed on them by their creator, the General Assembly. And it's about municipalities for 40 years thumbing their nose at the General Assembly, at the governor, and then ultimately at the Supreme Court. And in the last session, the General Assembly and the governor finally got sick of it and said, you know what, we're going to allow individuals, we're going to allow groups to go into court and force these municipalities to comply with the law. They don't have the authority to pass these ordinances.
Let me just hold on just 1 second. Let me just quote the mayor of Lancaster who said in an email, he says, talking about this ordinance, we believe it's reasonable and compliant with state law to require that people report or lost a stolen firearm within 3 days of discovering that it's missing. As far as the mayor of Lancaster is concerned, this law is in compliance with the state law.
We believe he's incorrect, and we're going to prove that in court.
So, first of all, no state court has ever held that a lost or stolen reporting requirement does, in fact, violate preemption. And that is exactly the reason that this new law was passed. They could not get standing to challenge it. Nobody could claim, I lost my gun, and I didn't report it, and I got fined. Or I might lose my gun someday. So, you know, Jonathan's talking about rights, but like you said, no court has said that this is a problem. Also, there's lots of ways to hold cities accountable if they're not doing something right. You don't create a private right of action for an individual. The state could do something. You could have a declaratory judgment. You could look to the state attorney general. This is a fee-generating scheme for gun lobby lawyers to get their fees paid and to threaten towns.
Well, and just picking up on that, so our listeners understand that if the NRA is successful against Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Lancaster, the court costs are basically covered by those cities. But if you lose, if the NRA loses, the reverse is not true.
That is correct. And you have to understand why. These municipalities have been thumbing their nose at the General Assembly for 40 years, and the General Assembly got sick of it. And so they decided that they were going to empower groups like the NRA, individuals and others, to go into court in an asymmetric way, right? The power here is asymmetric because they wanted these municipalities to withdraw these ordinances. It's just that simple. The day they withdraw the ordinance, the legal fees stop.
But sure, can something be said for the need for uniformity when it comes to laws so that – I mean, one can understand perhaps why a city might want to have its own kinds of laws, but enforcing it, doesn't that make problems for enforcement itself?
Well, it can, but certainly – you could argue that a city like Philadelphia has very different interests than a small town in the West. And Harrisburg, the General Assembly has refused to take any steps to help these cities and towns deal with things. Philadelphia makes requests to have its own mandatory minimums for carrying here. The bill goes nowhere. They want to be able to do different things to fight their gun violence problems. In fact, the case he mentioned, Ortiz, the dissent talks about Harrisburg abdicating its authority. And you know, Jonathan talks about this empowerment and the cities thumbing their nose. That is not why the legislature did this. At the last minute, rushing to get it to a governor's desk who they believed and everybody believed was not going to be governor come January, it was because the NRA said, we want this, do this for us. There's no other kind of law that a municipality passes that somebody can go and say, I don't live in this city, the law hasn't impacted me, I may never come to your city, and I'm going to sue you. And not only that, I'm going to get an organization of my friends to do it for me, and they might get fees. There's no such thing. The ACLU would love to have such a law to challenge things at the they might do. Somebody would love to be able to challenge a high school for not allowing prayer in school. They need an actual student who didn't get to pray in school to sue them. Jonathan doesn't need that. And in fact, his lawsuit is the NRA against Philadelphia.
You want to speak to that?
It's true. We are going to get legal fees for this. But you got to remember, sometimes when you lose at the General Assembly, when you don't get what you want, you haven't been conspired against. You just lose, right? The General Assembly has heard these arguments about why Philadelphia needs special rights and special privileges, and they've evaluated it, and they've chosen not to give Philadelphia special powers. They want uniformity with these laws across the Commonwealth. They've been very, very, very clear about it. The state Supreme Court has been very clear about it, and I can read you the language from Ortiz. It's a very short paragraph. And the anti-gun lobby has to live with the fact that their arguments are not convincing to the governor, General Assembly, or Supreme Court.
But would you say that Philadelphia's problem of gun violence is different than the problem, let's say, in Bryn Mawr or New Hope or a smaller, obviously safer municipality?
Look, the contours of crime across the Commonwealth are different for every crime, right? But the best place for those arguments to get hashed out is in our legislature, where they evaluate these arguments, they evaluate the evidence available to them, and they come to decisions that we have to live with.
So let's talk about losing, right? The reason that Act 192 is passed is because Jonathan and the organization he represents – well, actually, Jonathan wasn't the lawyer. The organization that Jonathan represents lost in court several times when it tried to sue Philadelphia and Pittsburgh for its lost and stolen ordinance. The court said, you don't have standing. So what they did is they got the legislature to rewrite what it means to have standing. And standing is how you get into court. You have to have an actual problem. Now
– meaning, in a sense, you were potentially harmed by –
potentially – actually harmed or about to be harmed. Now they don't need that. Anybody who can legally own a gun in this state, even if they don't own a gun, can sue any town or bring an organization of such members. My college alumni association, because I can legally bring a gun in the state, could sue Philadelphia for a gun ordinance.
I'm happy to help you with that case if they want to.
But again, I guess I'm back to where we began, which is why do you think this argument falls on deaf ears in the legislature?
Oh, I think some of that is power. I think the way this particular bill was passed, they could not get their standalone bill passed. They got it out of committee in April. It got 100 amendments attached to it, and they were afraid to have debate on the floor. So they attached it to a different bill, a bill that my organization, which, by the way, is not anti-gun. We are gun violence prevention, a bill that we supported. And then they sent it to the Senate where that bill could not get out of committee. So on the very last night, they added it to a bill about scrap metal. And they rammed it through. And when I went 2 days later to the House committee meeting on it, the answer was, we must get this to the governor. It has to be done today. They had to add session days. And my favorite part of the whole story is that the governor and the majority leader and the Senate pro tem signed the wrong version of the bill and had to come back and do it again.
Meaning that it was rushed through and happened sort of not in the dead of night so much. But, you know, why not have a vigorous debate in Harrisburg in the legislature on this?
We've been having vigorous debates about it for years. And, you know, the anti-gun groups come and they put all these amendments on it. We wanted our bill. We are politically savvy. We are politically powerful. We know how to make our arguments. And this is a bill we wanted. And we got it. And the fact that the anti-gun groups lost in the legislature – is what caused them to go out in sort of a very bad case of sore loserism, file this suit to have it overturned on constitutional grounds.
But do you think Ceasefire is an anti-gun group?
I do.
You do? I mean,
and I have a lot of respect for Shira. She and I are very friendly,
meaning
but
that,
I think that they.
Do you think it's okay for people to own guns legally?
Of course we do. And we are not trying to change either the Pennsylvania Constitution or the U.S. Constitution about that. We try and work with law-abiding gun owners. Our mission is to keep illegal guns off the street, reduce gun violence, keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. Our first priority is safety. We would like to minimize the burdens on law-abiding gun owners. We don't think that the kinds of laws at issue here that these cities and municipalities are passing because they believe it keeps them safer and their communities safer do burden law-abiding gun owners. And in fact, Jonathan doesn't have a law-abiding gun owner that he's representing in these suits against these three cities.
So, you know, how you spend your time speaks volumes about what you believe in. And I spend a lot of my weekends and a lot of my evenings with other NRA members who've taken the time to become certified instructors, who've taken the time to teach Boy Scouts how to use firearms safely, who've taken the time to train, who've taken the time to incorporate firearms ownership into a wholesome outdoors lifestyle. I have never run into a member of Ceasefire or other what I'll call anti-gun groups teaching those skills. So, you know, they're not out spending their time.
But isn't that part of what the NRA does? Part of it is teaching responsible gun ownership.
It's actually how we spend the bulk of our budget. But what I'm saying is that when groups that I characterize as anti-gun say that they're really about teaching gun safety, I don't find them out teaching gun safety classes.
I didn't say that. I didn't say I teach gun safety, and I don't think anybody would want to take a gun safety class from me. I said we are about public safety. We spend the bulk of our time working with communities that have been affected, trying to empower them, teaching them about activism, working about culture issues, trying to show that having an illegal gun is more dangerous than not. We take people into courts to try and get tougher sentences. So I didn't say we teach gun safety. I said we're about safety. And in terms of the sore loserish argument, you've gone to the courts and the legislature to get what you want. We, not even me, but legislators and cities who feel that this bill was passed unconstitutionally have gone to the courts. That's exactly what they're supposed to do.
We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. That's Shira Goodman, Executive Director of Ceasefire Pennsylvania. Also with us, Jonathan Goldstein. He's a lawyer here in the area representing the NRA in three lawsuits brought against three Pennsylvania cities. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen talking with Jonathan Goldstein and Shira Goodman, and we're talking about the fact that former Governor Tom Corbett, in fact, one of his last actions as Pennsylvania's governor, signed a bill that allows groups like the National Rifle Association to sue municipalities that attempt to pass restrictions on firearms that are more stringent than the state's requirements. Bit of a mouthful there. The NRA has seized this opportunity, has filed lawsuits against Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Lancaster, stating that they are, and they are also stating that they plan to go after other Pennsylvania towns in the future. And we're talking again with Jonathan Goldstein and Shira Goodman about this Act 192, where it came from, the implications. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at @WHYY Radio Times. Jonathan, I know you want to say something nice about Shira, but let me just put something to you.
Sure.
As a firearms instructor for the NRA.
Sure.
Don't you think a responsible gun owner would report a lost or stolen gun? Isn't that part of being a responsible gun owner to
sure,
do that?
Most do. But whether the municipalities are the right place to require that under the law or whether the General Assembly is the right place, it's very clear that the General Assembly is. But yeah, I think most responsible gun owners would do that. Shira and I have a very active dialogue. Okay, we're always looking for ways to come together and do the right thing to reduce gun violence, to reduce crime. I mean, there's no organization in the country that's more committed to reducing gun violence and keeping guns out of the wrong people's hands than the NRA. Why? It's in our self-interest. I mean, you know, when you have somebody go out and commit a crime with a gun, it's going to get read back onto us, whether it's proper or not. We are very, very focused on making sure that the wrong people don't have guns. And whenever we can find an active point of dialogue to do it, we will.
Well, having interviewed the Philadelphia Police Commissioner, I don't think he feels that way about the NRA, but I'll let that pass. Go ahead.
I mean, I think I would agree with the Police Commissioner. The NRA opposes expanding background checks, which are to enforce so that the wrong people don't get guns. They have opposed a statewide lost or stolen requirement. They don't want new things like, you know, talking about a gun violence restraining order that could deal with people in crisis. They really do. And the gun lobby as a whole really pushes this guns for anyone, anywhere, anytime agenda.
This reporting of lost or stolen guns is a way of trying to get at straw purchases. If that's not the way to get at illegal guns, what is a more effective way then?
So let's talk about that. I wrote an article in the Philadelphia Lawyer magazine in the fall of 2013 where I talked about this. I actually went and looked at the data. The Pennsylvania Commission on Sentencing keeps data about who gets sentenced for what crimes in Pennsylvania. And in 2008, Mark Fazzola, who's a reporter for The Inquirer, wrote an article sort of calling attention to the fact that most of the state's 67 county prosecutors didn't file any cases against alleged straw buyers in 06 or 07. So what I did is I went back and I looked at data for 04 as a baseline year. And I compared the 04 data to the most current year at the time, which was 2011. And what we found is that in 04, there were 84 prosecutions for straw purchases across the whole Commonwealth in 67 counties. In 2011, there were 136. So, you know, you have a law on the books that makes it a felony, to engage in a straw purchase. And across the whole Commonwealth, they could only find 136 cases to prosecute. They do not need more laws to prosecute this. They have a felony statute, and they're simply not using it.
Go ahead, Shira.
So also in 2012, Jonathan well knows, we have a new state law passed about straw purchasing, mandatory minimums. You know, the whole business of being a straw purchaser is that you have a clean record. And you can go and buy your gun and you trade on that clean record. So there were issues with sentencing. There were issues where people didn't have a lot of incentive to flip on the person they were buying for. Now we have these mandatory minimums. There's more incentives. We've been reading about prosecutions all the time, Chester, Delaware County, Philadelphia. I think those numbers are going up.
In 2012, they were 155. So it's up by 20 more year over year.
Again, this law passed and was effective the end of 2012. But I don't think that's the point. You know, they are trying to get us straw purchasers. I think if Commissioner Ramsey, if D.A. Williams were here, they would tell you, yeah, we want to get these guys. We want to get these guns off the street. Give us tools.
And you see the reporting of lost and stolen guns as a tool?
That's what the police tell me. I mean, we don't make up this stuff. They say, you know, Commissioner Ramsey and Jonathan and I were on a panel together in 2013. He said, report the damn thing stolen. It helps us. Hmm. You know, and now you hear more and more, oh, how did he get the gun? It was reported stolen in a burglary a few years ago. Now they don't have to go back to that person who reported that gun. They can start doing the rest of their work.
Let me ask you, Shira, if you think some of these ordinances have gone too far. My understanding is in Pittsburgh, the ordinance was that you can only discharge a gun at a licensed or acceptable target range. Does that seem too restrictive to you?
I think you have to talk to the Pittsburgh City Council. So what were they worried about? They were worried about people were shooting off guns in the street. Now, I think that Jonathan and I would both say that these discharge ordinances, the town seem a little less worried. They're not so sure. I'm not even so sure if Jonathan's so sure that they would be as preempted as he said that the other ones are. I think it reflects this desire to what can we do to keep our town safer? What are the police telling us we need? And what is Harrisburg failing to do for us? So I think that this goes to those towns that they felt there was something they needed. And again, it differs between the bigger cities and the smaller towns.
But see, that's the issue. What has Harrisburg failed to do for us? The proper response to that for these municipalities is to go back to Harrisburg and try and convince Harrisburg to give them what they want. The thing that they're really struggling with every one of these municipalities is a creation of the General Assembly. And they have certain – even in the 21st century, these are governments of limited enumerated powers. And they don't have the authority to do what they're doing. And that's why the General Assembly, after 40 years of watching these municipalities exceed their authority, said, enough. We are going to empower groups to go in and sue them and stop it.
But why is that the answer? Why is it empower groups? Why isn't the General Assembly taking care of it? Why isn't the state taking care of it? Why should you, Jonathan Goldstein, and your law firm benefit? Why should you have the responsibility and the privilege to do that?
You're going to have to ask the General Assembly. In their judgment, this was the best way to get this enforcement done.
Well, this seems like the best time to bring in Senator Dalen Leach, who joins us by telephone, a member of the General Assembly. And nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Let me just say first parenthetically that there are many more effective ways. The reason there are so few straw purchasers that are caught is because it's almost impossible to catch them. That's why we need a one-gun-a-month bill, which prohibits straw purchasers from getting the guns in the first place. But on this specific piece of legislation, it's just important to understand how breathtaking this legislation is. We passed in Harrisburg a bill which gives an out-of-state organization the right to sue our own people. It's very unusual and, in fact, unprecedented for a legislature to do that, not only for passing gun ordinances, but even for passing resolutions, which are nothing more than the expression of a wish that the law changes in the future, which, of course, has major First Amendment issues, as well as a practice. If a municipality says, you know what, we've had problems, no more guns in school board meetings, you could be sued for that under the language of this act. So I organized a lawsuit we filed suit because this law was passed unconstitutionally in the sense that we have something called the single subject rule. This was originally a bill which created criminal penalties for the theft of secondary metals, aluminum and copper, to which we added civil penalties against municipalities for passing things related to guns. They're completely unrelated, and we're going to win this lawsuit. This law will be struck down.
Well, and hold on 1 second. Let me give Jonathan Goldstein a chance to respond to your comment.
I think they're not going to win the lawsuit. I think that both of the changes that were made under HB 80 modified the crimes code, and I think that the Supreme Court has indicated repeatedly that they're quite loath to strike down laws on these constitutional bases. And, you know, Senator Leach and I are just going to have to agree to disagree. We've got it in front of a court, and we're going to have to wait to hear from them. But I think they don't have a strong suit here.
Well, Jonathan's right that we'll have to wait to see what the court says, but that's not what the court has been very aggressive in striking down laws on single subject rule. They struck down Megan's law. They struck down the hate crimes bill. I can go through about 10 laws that they've struck down. Beyond that, they've been very clear that just because two things are in the same code is not an argument. They have to be part of a common scheme to do the same thing.
Well,
these are two totally unrelated things.
Nothing
to do with it.
And Senator Leach, let me just – but since you're a member of the legislature, you're a senator in Harrisburg, right. How was this able to get – if it's as illegal as you say or unconstitutional as you say, how was it able to be passed?
Because the Pennsylvania legislature is a wholly owned subsidiary of the NRA. I mean, literally, you know, there are many pieces of legislation which, before they can pass, you know, people say, senators, representatives openly say, I got to run this by the NRA, make sure they're okay with it. And it's, you know, you got to give compliments to the NRA. They're very good politically. They're very effective. But it has, I think, terrible consequences for the people of Pennsylvania. And here they overreached because this is such a – I mean, again, we've allowed out-of-state organizations to – because that's who pays when municipalities are sued. It's the taxpayers. So we've allowed this group to sue our own citizens. That's a big political lift, which is why it had to be done on the very last day in the middle of the night in an unrelated bill. It was done so fast that the governor signed the wrong bill. Had to come back and sign it a second time.
Yeah, and hold on there. Hold on, only because I want to give Shira Goodman a chance to weigh in as well.
Well, I agree with the senator. We've been working closely with him. I think that he is right that the Supreme Court is tired of these games from the legislature. Certainly over the history of Pennsylvania, it's gone back and forth with what they'll tolerate from the legislature. But the recent line of cases shows they really don't like these games. This is the senator's right as a representative and the colleagues he sued with to say, you know, if we're going to pass legislation that has this sweeping effect, we need to do it the right way. And so I applaud him and commend him and thank him for what he's doing.
But how come ceasefire doesn't have more clout in Harrisburg compared to the NRA?
Well, you know, I wish that we had the same level of money and history as the NRA. We are growing. We have, you know, more donations, more members, more people working with us. You know, if you look at this issue, which is very wonky, you know, last week we know that at least 50 people across the Commonwealth submitted letters to their editors about this. We know people are calling. We think that's why they couldn't pass their standalone bill, because of all the calls. So we're getting there. We need to do more. If people want to help us fight the gun lobby and the NRA, visit ceasefirepa.org, get involved, help. We need that.
Senator Leach, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Looks like you want to add something, Jonathan.
No, look, I mean, I'm not going to apologize for the fact that we're very good at protecting our interests. I mean, our members are really active. They care about this stuff. This is a civil rights issue to us. It's as important to us as any other civil rights issue is to any other civil rights group. And, you know, that is why we have hundreds of thousands of members in this Commonwealth and over 5 million, probably trending towards 6 million paid members across the country. I think these anti-gun groups struggle to have paid members and to be influential because their cause is not mainstream.
Well, and I would say, though, that Jonathan knows that, you know, you join people join the NRA for lots of reasons. The NRA is different than it was years ago. I would disagree with him that they're all about safety and gun safety now and sportsmen and hunting. They are a very good political organization, very savvy. And I think a lot of their leadership and lobbyists don't necessarily reflect the goals and thoughts and opinions of law-abiding gun owners who are simply members.
Let me just reintroduce the two of you. That's Shira Goodman, and she's the executive director of Ceasefire Pennsylvania, or Ceasefire PA, a coalition dedicated to reducing gun violence in Pennsylvania. Also with us, Jonathan Goldstein. He's an attorney partner in the law firm of McNelly and Goldstein. He's the lawyer representing the NRA in lawsuits brought against three Pennsylvania cities. That would be Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Lancaster. And we just said goodbye to Senator Leach of Pennsylvania. We have lots of callers at 1-888-477-9499. Also lots of comments on our Facebook page and email and tweets as well. Did you want to add something, Jonathan?
So let's talk about standing for a second. You know, this notion that the grant of standing to citizens and groups, yes, some of which happen to be from out of state, some of which are clearly in state, is some kind of a breathtaking departure is really not accurate. I mean, when you look at some of the cases, and I'll give you a couple examples, there's a case called In the Interest of GD, a Minor. It's from the Pennsylvania Superior Court. It's just an example. But, you know, the legislature all the time via statute changes who has standing to come into cases. This was a case that was about who could get involved in a foster child's well-being, a matter of the foster child's well-being. And the legislature had to decide, well, is it step-parents? Is it prospective step-parents? Is it, you know, did the ring go further than that? All the time, the legislature is altering standing. I'll give you another example. You recall back in December of 2013, you had Mary Tracy from Scrub on your show, right?
Yes.
They were impacted by a similar bill, right, where the standing to challenge who could place a billboard was altered by the legislature. It was changed legislatively. Why? Because they evaluated the facts and decided they wanted to change who could challenge billboards. The Congress has also had this issue, and the Supreme Court of the United States has found this a legitimate exercise of the legislative power. It's very ordinary. Now, you can be angry that you didn't get that special grant and we did, but it's not something that's out of the ordinary.
Yes, it is. No, that is not true. I mean, the first day of law school, you learn that you don't get to just challenge a law you don't like. They had to redefine what it means to be an aggrieved person that has standing, right? And in fact, if you look at Act 192, it says any person who could legally own a gun, any organization with such a member, or anybody who would traditionally have standing. They acknowledge it. This is not like a foster case where you're talking about this. I mean, Jonathan's getting into all the wonkiness, but this is the only statute in the country so far, though I would hazard a guess that it's likely to spread if successful. And this is very unusual. It's very different. And don't be fooled by that.
Let me get Bill from Germantown to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm Bill King. I'm a local pediatrician and also a Cub Scout Aquila who does work on shooting sports training with Cub Scouts. And I've worked a lot on anti-gun violence, but have also worked on, you know, safety with hunting and fishing. So, you know, I don't understand why there is one part of an argument can have all these lawyerly examples of standing to have people who are aggrieved fight local law enforcement regulations, but there's not standing for people who are aggrieved by violence. Do we have standing to fight the effects of the violence? No. So I don't understand why the state legislature is interfering so much with local law enforcement.
Well, I appreciate Bill, you raise an interesting point. I want to just frame it and toss it back to Jonathan, which is talk about standing. If people feel like they are the victims of violence or perhaps even live in a violent neighborhood impacted by violence, do they not have standing?
Well, if you get hurt by somebody, traditional laws of standing say you go into court and you sue them for the damages around it. Now, there are limits on that. For example, you know, the anti-gun groups went into court a number of times to try to sue lawful manufacturers of firearms for this very attenuated chain that they put together that somehow violence on a street corner leads back to the guy that made the gun. And Congress said no way and passed the Lawful Commerce and Firearms Act to limit that sort of thing. But yeah, if you're hurt by violence in your neighborhood by a person, you go and sue that person. That's traditional standing.
What do you think, Sarah?
Well, I'm glad that Jonathan explain that they did not lose in court. The Congress saw these lawsuits coming. Then Mayor Rendell was going to join with other cities and say, you know, we know that many, many, many of the crime guns come from very few dealers and manufacturers could help us with this. And Congress immunized them. This area of law, firearms law, guns, gun rights, is treated with kid gloves by legislators in Harrisburg, in state capitals all over, in D.C., everywhere, is treated differently. And, you know, you're right. We need to have more people rising up and saying we've had enough. But, you know, it's not just all a matter of, oh, the courts do everything the same and the legislators do everything the same. The gun lobby gets special treatment.
Well, hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to you talking about Act 192. It was passed in late November, became law in January, and a couple of days after it became law, the NRA decided to sue Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Lancaster, charging that their ordinances violate a 1974 state law that bars municipalities from passing gun laws more stringent than the states. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, again talking with Shira Goodman, Executive Director of Ceasefire Pennsylvania, and Jonathan Goldstein. He's a lawyer representing the NRA in lawsuits brought against three Pennsylvania cities. They are Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Lancaster. And I do want to get back to our callers. I also want to read some comments coming from email, tweets, and our Facebook page. But I know, Jonathan, do you remember what you wanted to say before the break?
So okay. The idea that the gun lobby somehow is this unique entity that's getting all this special treatment. I mean, you have lots of special interests in this country that are powerful and that make their way to the front of the line. There's a coalition around free speech. You have people that are pro and anti-abortion. I mean, there are groups that are passionate about these sorts of civil rights issue, and we absolutely make our way to the front of the line, and we're never going to apologize for that.
We have a tweet from Josh. How can cash-strapped cities afford to compete with the NRA in Harrisburg, like Jonathan said? And there are a number of municipalities put in ordinances, and now they're backing off because they're saying, you know, if we lose, we have to pay the NRA. We cannot afford to do this.
That's exactly what the legislature wanted them to do. Repeal the ordinances and the legal fees stop.
That's exactly what the NRA wanted them to do, and they got the legislature to do it. But what they've now done is put these public servants who serve, you know, on their town councils, on their borough councils for very little, if any, compensation, into the terrible position of choosing between something they listened to their police and did for public safety or being fear of for the public budget. And that's a terrible position. And these are their representatives in Harrisburg who did this to them.
But these municipalities broke the law. Okay, if you go back and you look at the Ortiz case, right? The Ortiz case, what the Supreme Court said is that the sum of the cases is that the Constitution of Pennsylvania requires that home rule municipalities may not perform any powers denied by the General Assembly, and the General Assembly has denied all municipalities the power to regulate ownership, et cetera. Mm. The point is that when the Supreme Court told these municipalities they didn't have this power, it made them criminals, right? Under the Uniform Firearms Act, violating the Uniform Firearms Act is a first-degree misdemeanor. So you can't then come into court and say, oh, woe is us. You're committing a crime at that point. When the Supreme Court tells you to cut it out, you have to cut it out.
But
this is a system of laws.
Go ahead,
why are you, Jonathan Goldstein, private attorney for the NRA, the person chosen to enforce it, to get benefits from it, to do all this. The state has lots of different tools to enforce things against municipalities. This is a bullying tactic because your goal is just to get them to rescind. It's an intimidation tactic, and it's a punishment, and they have now enlisted private actors to do their work.
They've spent 40 years defying the law, not just the General Assembly, not just the governor, but the Supreme Court. And so the General Assembly said, we're going to give this asymmetric tool to force these municipalities to obey the law. If you want to know why they did it, you're going to have to ask them.
But is it that municipalities cannot pass any laws or any laws that are any more, quote unquote, stringent than state laws?
They cannot get out in front of the General Assembly with regard to gun regulation. That's it.
That's a little broader than the statute. It talks about the lawful regulation of the possession, transfer, transportation of firearms and components. It doesn't say they can't pass any law. And most of these laws, many of these laws that are being rescinded now, have never been ruled on the merits to actually violate preemption. And they're trying to avoid that by sending threatening letters saying, we're going to sue you. You know what Jonathan just said, it's going to get very expensive. That's a threat. That's bully tactics.
Bully tactics. No? Yes? No?
Look, the General Assembly told them to cut it out. They didn't listen. The Supreme Court told them to cut it out. They didn't listen. So, yeah, now it's going to come with a cudgel. You know, you've got to cut it out.
And you're the cudgel? The NRA is the cudgel?
The legal fees are the cudgel. We will stop today if these municipalities will withdraw these ordinances. But if they won't withdraw the ordinances, we're going full steam ahead.
So ask Jonathan, why not file a – use your new standing and just file for declaratory judgment and not get fees that enrich you?
We've asked for fees. We're entitled to them under the statute. The faster they withdraw their ordinances, the more likely it is we can negotiate to perhaps not hit them with the fees. But if we have to spend the next 2 years in court forcing them to do what the law requires, they're going to have to pay for it. If they withdraw their ordinances today, let's sit down. We're not maniacs. We're reasonable people. We'll figure out a way to get these ordinances off the books and get this thing put to bed.
Let me get Fritz from Allentown to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Fritz. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Marty. I was struck by Mr. Goldstein's remarkable assertion that the NRA is all about safety, and that's where they spend most of their budget. This is the organization that actually lobbied for, wrote legislation in Florida that prevents pediatricians from asking prospective parents if there are any guns in the home so that they can warn the parents about the importance of gun safety, because we lose hundreds of children to horrible gun accidents every year. It's remarkable that you make that assertion that they're all about safety. It's also the organization that's behind the TIAA amendments that prevent the ATF from requiring the gun dealers do an annual inventory and report the results to the ATF, despite the fact that we know that less than 2% of bad egg gun dealers are responsible for over 60% of crime guns.
Fritz, let me take your comment and give Jonathan Goldstein a chance to respond.
Sure. My mandate doesn't extend to Florida, so I'm just going to have to punt on that. I just don't know a thing about it. But what I can say is this.
But you are representing an organization that has done those in other states.
Yeah, we've passed laws and we've taken positions in other states, some of which are popular, some of which are not. Here's what I'm going to encourage your listeners to do. Go up to GuideStar, right, or one of the sites that shares, and look up the Form 990 for the NRA Foundation. And look at the amount of money that we're spending on gun safety. Yes, we spend a lot of money on lobbying. We do. And we're not going to apologize for that. But we also spend a ton of money on safety, on training, on Olympic shooting sports, on hunting, on hunter safety. You have to look at us comprehensively. And when you look at us comprehensively, you'll see we spend the bulk of our money on things involving safety.
How do you see the NRA, Shira?
I see the NRA as an organization that started one way about safety and about the hunting and shooting sports and has evolved into a political machine that has an agenda of guns for anyone, anywhere, anytime, to fight all regulation. I don't think that these lawsuits and this law is about protecting the rights of law-abiding gun owners. I think it's to stop regulation at the local level, and then the next goal is to stop it at the state level, and then the next goal is at the federal level. They don't want any regulation at all. Their answer is more guns, more guns, more guns.
Are there other states looking at what's happening in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Nebraska, a bill was introduced that's very similar. Florida has a law that's a little bit different. They don't give this special standing, but they actually allow criminal penalties against officials. So, you know, we know that this is their their modus operandi, you know, stand your ground laws a few years ago, state by state by state. So Pennsylvania is kind of the place everybody's looking. We're certainly talking about it with our national partners in other states. And, you know, they are worried that something like this will happen. And I think it is, you know, I think that part of the reason, you know, the senator talked about late at night, last day of session, hard to get everybody motivated. It's wonky. It's confusing. Jonathan keeps citing cases. I mean, that's hard. But I think people are getting more and more interested and enraged about it. I mean, your callers, Fritz and Bill, regular folks who are saying, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you punishing our towns, the mayors, the town councils? And I think when we win the lawsuit and they try and come back again, they're going to find it much harder yet again to pass a standalone bill.
We have an email from Mike, and not surprisingly, the show has kind of devolved into a discussion about the NRA. But Mike says, the vast majority of Americans accept and support the Second Amendment and historically supported the NRA. It's the relatively recent absolutism of the NRA that has created a rise in resistance.
I don't know that that's entirely true. I mean, we are, again, a mainstream civil rights organization. We've got 5 million paid members. Our members are active in every state. We're focused on gun safety. And sure, we are focused on gun regulation. We are certainly not about a gun for everybody at all times, no regulation. We work very hard to keep the guns out of the hands of the mentally ill. We work very hard to keep the guns out of the hands of criminals. And, you know, the NRA selected me to represent them in this lawsuit because they're aware of my writings and my public speaking. And frequently when I write in public and speak in public on this topic, I rise in favor of those kinds of restrictions if they're crafted correctly.
What is the argument against then Act 192? I mean, if you can in a kind of concise way, Shira, explain that to us. I mean, what is the counter argument
to Act 192?
Yes.
Well, first of all, it's not. I think there's several. One is that it does change the way you get into court. It is trying to punish towns and cities by people who have not been hurt or injured or have any standing, and you've created this new special right. You also, if Jonathan is correct, that the legislature is so enraged that municipalities have been doing this. Let the legislature and the court take care of it. Why is there a private right of action that doesn't exist for any other type of ordinance? So that is – and it is a slap in the face to towns and cities that are saying, Harrisburg's refusing to do this. We're trying to protect our cities. These are people – the mayors are the people who get the calls in the middle of the night when there's been a shooting. These are the people who struggle with their cities, who are trying to raise their revenues and keep their streets safer and work on shoestring budgets. And this is a slap in the face from their own representatives in Harrisburg who have given in to a gun lobby. It is a gift wrapped to lawyers like Jonathan. They're now going to spend the next couple years, like he said, racking up fees.
Let me get Lisa from Doylestown to join our conversation. Lisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
As one of your listeners, I find this really just sounds like a badly lit comedy. Everything from the governor accidentally signing the legislature to, you know, hearing about, you know, what changes. I think most Americans agree we need after, you know, some of the horrific violence we've seen.
Lisa, if you can do me a favor, so do you have a direct thing that you want to say or a question that you want to ask?
Well, my comment is just, you know, can we get back to the legislature to work around this instead of wasting so much time and money with the NRA and lawyers? Can we get this law, you know, repealed? Is there something else we can do from a legislative standpoint now?
Well, it's a good question. I'll ask both of you, to you, Shira, and then to you, Jonathan.
Lisa, thanks so much. I mean, I think that starts right at home with your own legislators in Doylestown and talking to them, your senators and representatives. And, you know, if you visit ceasefirepa.org, we can help you figure out who that is and how to reach them. But the numbers in the legislature are not necessarily in favor of a repeal. I think that the new governor might sign such a thing, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to have to do it through the courts. But I would definitely start making those calls because I think we are seeing that the legislators are realizing that this is not very popular.
What do you think, Jonathan?
It's so simple. Repeal the illegal ordinances at the local levels and all the litigation stops. It's just that simple. You know, these municipalities are like your kids when they come to you and say, you're not the boss of me. Well, in this case, the legislature is the boss of them, right? It told them to stop it. They've told them they don't have this authority. And they've told them we're going to inflict these pain on you if you don't cut it out. And
is that a threat?
By the legislature? At some level, it must be, right? We want you to stop doing this. You've been thumbing your nose at us for 40 years. Cut it out. But it's a threat that's so easy to remedy. All they've got to do is withdraw these ordinances. Just this morning, I think it was Newtown Township in Bucks County, there was a report in the newspaper. They repealed the ordinances. No litigation.
Why?
No
cost. And that is happening, Sheila.
That is happening because they're worried about their threats. They're getting letters from people like colleagues of Jonathan that they're going to sue, threatening letters. It's going to cost you a bundle. And, you know, cities like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh have phenomenal city solicitor's offices with full-time staffs. And some of these other ones, they contract out. They're worried about costs legitimately. Now, this whole thing about the city's thumbing their nose, I mean, it's just this nice story that Jonathan's telling. But, you know, before Governor Corbett was Governor Corbett, he was an attorney general. He wasn't going after these towns. The district attorneys aren't going after these towns and officials. The legislature isn't saying we're going to give Jonathan the power to sue for declaratory action or an injunction to stop this. No, he gave them fees, fee shifting, something completely unusual in our legal system. I mean, he's telling a nice story, but this is not what it's about.
Is it that the NRA risks nothing? Because even if they lose, they don't incur any penalties?
Right, they'll pay their own fees. Jonathan's filing very similar complaints, you know, depending on the ordinance in each city. He's done the research. He knows what he wants to say. It's not costing him that much. He can sue all these cities. And all he has to do is file the same complaint, pay the court cost. And if he wins, he's going to try and get all that covered. If he loses, the city still has to pay its cost to defend, but Jonathan doesn't have to pay it.
Let me get Gloria and hold on. Gloria from Bethlehem to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Gloria. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
I listened to the floor debate on this bill last fall, and I wanted to ask clarification on something I heard, and that is that this bill created a special standing for an organization outside the state of Pennsylvania to sue, and that had never been done before in Pennsylvania, and that if it were contested in court, it would be found unconstitutional, but that would cost the taxpayers to bring the lawsuit. Am I right about that?
Thank you. It's kind of what we've been talking about.
You need to have, the organization needs to have at least one person in Pennsylvania as
a member.
And
we have several hundred thousand.
Who could own a gun. Now, and then they can be an out-of-state organization as long as they have a Pennsylvania person who can legally own a gun. The lawsuit that's challenging the act, by the way, that is not costing the taxpayers money. Deckert Law Firm is representing the senators, representatives, and the three cities pro bono.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Again, it's just so simple. Repeal the ordinances and the whole thing stops. The General Assembly enacted a law with asymmetric penalties. Why would they do that? I mean, are they
Well,
are they in the grip of some sinister organization? I mean,
one explanation.
Yeah.
Right. But so you're telling me that several hundred elected officials are somehow so enraptured that they just zombie-like followed us off a cliff? Or did they look at the merits of this? Did they get tired of the fact that these municipalities are thumbing their nose, that the district attorneys in the various counties are not doing it, that embattled Democratic Attorney General Kane is not going to take action against it, and decide enough?
Well, what about Democratic Attorney General Kane, embattled or not, first Democratic Attorney General in years? So you've been talking about 40 years during which you've had all these Republican attorney generals, including Attorney General Corbett, who then became Governor Corbett. So this story you're telling is a myth. Yes, the legislature was enthralled to the NRA, who made this their number one priority and wanted it passed before Election Day.
Look, you either accept Shearer's narrative or you accept mine. I think that it is reasonable to say that the legislature looked at these priorities, looked at what was before them, and said, yeah, we want these local ordinances repealed.
Was that at midnight on October 15th while they were debating scrap metal?
It was over 4 years while they looked at this, and they'd finally had enough and passed it at the end of the session.
Well, they're playing my song, which means we do have to end our hour. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Jonathan Goldstein, attorney partner in the law firm of McNelly and Goldstein. He's the lawyer representing the NRA and their suits against Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Lancaster. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And also with us, Shira Goodman, and she's executive director of Ceasefire PA, a coalition dedicated to reducing gun violence in Pennsylvania. Shira, nice to have you with us on the show as well.
Thanks. It's been great.
And you can carry on this conversation. I'm being bombarded with comments here looking at my computer screens. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. And thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.